episode 36 of Welcome to Level 7, Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Welcome to Level 7, the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Welcome to Level 7. I'm Ben Avery, and I am here to co-host this journey into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And today, a related and yet not really canon, obviously, side jaunt into a fun little musical. But before we get to that...
Whoa. What are you talking about? I watched 30 minutes of Tracks tonight.
Of what?
Tracks. You know, the episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay, that's great.
I'm fully prepared to talk about it.
Okay. I guess we'll be having two different podcasts tonight, because I have
notes.
That
they're in a notebook.
I know. You're analog like that. It's good.
Old school.
That voice there is Daniel Butcher. He is a Disney blogger and a Marvel fan. I'm a comic book writer and a Marvel fan. And right now we're trying to get back on the same page. In Daniel's case, literal page of paper.
I know what we're talking about. It's Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
That's right.
Come on, man. I prepare.
Okay, well, this is a different episode.
Well, first of all, where's all my news? Because we've been putting things on Facebook like crazy. I've been a hot mess of just dropping things onto Facebook.
Yes.
All the factual and accurate things that are going to occur and happen.
Yeah. That's why we're not really doing any news today, is because it's just a lot of rumors and things that you could easily logically extrapolate from what you already know. Just about the situations. We're not bothering with news. And also feedback. We'll talk about that later, probably in the episode. But next week is going to be more feedback. Although, actually, next week we're talking about Marvel's Unlimited digital comics. So
two weeks from now. Lots and lots of feedback.
Right.
I have to say, this is not an original thought for us to do this topic.
We're willing to steal from anyone who wants to put something into the big bag.
I wouldn't call it stealing, since it is specifically people saying, you should do.
It was a well-wrapped gift.
Yeah, it was put into the big bag, and we needed stuff to talk about. I don't remember who it was that mentioned it first, but we have had multiple people mention this to us about a possibility for a podcast topic. So if it was you, ma'am, or you, sir, who mentioned it first, thank you very much. Everyone else, also thank you very much. We do appreciate that kind of feedback, and it worked out nicely for us because we didn't have a new Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode this week. We kind of did by having this, so it was fun. All right, anything else we need to say here, Daniel, before we start?
Nope, let's jump into it.
Mission report.
So usually we just spoil throughout the whole thing. In tonight's episode, we're actually going to stay away from spoilers, specifically in the third act, until after we throw out some sort of spoiler warning.
Right.
Now, if you haven't seen it yet, it'll be pretty easy for you to see it soon. So that's one of the reasons why we feel like, you know what, let's not spoil for a bit. We'll get you excited if you haven't seen it yet. And then hopefully what you'll do is you'll pause us, go spend 42 minutes to watch it, and then come back.
Right, because we do want to talk about the big spoiler stuff in Act 3. Now, this was divided into three acts, and it was released in three different days as these kind of 15-minute episodes digitally. And so you'd watch it online on Hulu. But third act, that's where all the big stuff happens, and that's where, you know, And I'm just going to say this right now. If you have not watched it, seriously, go ahead. Stop listening. I believe it's on Netflix.
So let's talk about how to watch it. So I've seen it on Netflix. So when I went to rewatch it this week, I actually tried to watch it through Netflix, and it wouldn't load through the device that I was using.
Oh.
So I actually saw it via YouTube, because it's like, oh, I'll just see what's out there on YouTube, because I knew it was eventually a web series. So it's something that I know that you don't need to have a subscription to see, because I literally saw the entire thing on YouTube this time around.
Yeah.
And then I've also seen it on DVD.
And it was on Hulu, but I don't know if it still is on Hulu. But that's how it was originally released, was through Hulu. I watched it because I bought it on iTunes. When it originally came out on Hulu, I believe I watched the first two episodes. And then I don't know if I watched the third one. And then when it came out on iTunes, I bought it. And it might have been I might have watched all three episodes on Hulu, and then I bought it on iTunes just, you know, to support the team, so to speak. And it wasn't very expensive on iTunes. I don't know what it is right now. In fact, I'm going to look it up here in just a moment. But yeah, so I was able to watch it through my iTunes account when I bought it, you know, 3 years ago, I guess. For whatever
you could probably buy this for as much as it takes to rent Howard the Duck. I'm just saying. But again, everyone who has at least an internet connection should have access to Dr. Horrible's Singalog blog.
Yes. Okay. So that's how you can get it. Okay, here it is. Oh, it's $10.
Ooh.
No, that's the album. That's the album.
Oh, okay.
It's $8 for the HD version on iTunes. And for the standard definition, it doesn't tell me how much it is, because I click on standard definition, and where the price would be, it says purchased. So, okay.
So let's talk about, why do we care? Why, as fans of this little show, do we even care about Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog, other than the fact that it has superheroes and villains?
Okay, well, let's talk about why I did care. Because, as people know, I didn't watch Buffy. And I didn't watch Angel. I mean, I watched an episode here and there. I knew there was a musical episode of Buffy, which had some sort of demon that forced them to sing about things that were in their heart or something. I don't know. I haven't seen it. That might be one of the episodes we have to watch, Daniel. But there was a musical episode of Buffy. And I was a fan of Firefly. That's why I got Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog in the first place. That's why it was important to me. But now, Daniel, good grief.
Well, it's like the playground where our show started in.
Seriously. Seriously. I mean, just looking at the the crossover from Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We have, obviously, we have Joss Whedon.
The Vision. I mean, the one who brings to us the scope of the show, the one who...
Paul Bettany.
Not Paul Bettany. But, you know, wrote our pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, has laid down what the concept is. So the foundation for the show in Joss Whedon.
And Jed Whedon.
And?
I'm gonna say her name wrong, but it's Marissa Tancherone, I believe.
That's why I asked you to do it. Which I'll argue those two, Marissa and Jed, those are our day-to-day on the ground floor operators and supervisors right there.
They're the ones building the building on top of the foundation. Although they were there for the first episode too. So I mean, they were there with Joss.
Yes, they were there at the birth, but I mean he literally set it up to hand them the keys. So, I mean, they're the ones who are the showrunners. They're the ones working with writers and directors. They're the ones making sure that the show is staying on the path that Joss has laid out.
Yeah. But there are other faces, obviously, that I recognize from various Whedon things. Nathan Fillion, obviously, from Firefly and Serenity. And Felicia Day, who I believe was in the episode of Dollhouse that I stopped watching on or something. But she did appear on Dollhouse in one of the season enders or something like that. I need to rewatch Dollhouse. I really want to. Okay, so.
So, well, and here in this production, going back to Joss, Jed, and Marissa. So Joss, Jed, and Marissa, along with another Whedon brother, Zach, are all credited as the creators. Joss directed, and I believe he's the one who put up the $200,000 to make this production happen.
I believe so.
Joss produced. Joss, Jed, and Marissa all have writing credits. And they all have appearances within the show.
Yes.
Marissa shows up as a fangirl. And Jed and Joss are part of the, what I like to call, the Bad Horse Choir. They actually do the singing voices.
Yes. And I was proud of myself, though, Daniel. And listeners, you can be proud of me if you are one of the Whedonites out there. I recognized Marissa as Marissa without seeing her in the credits.
Ditto.
Before the credits came, I said, I recognize that face, and then it hit me. I was so proud of myself.
Now, years ago, I had no idea when I first saw this who she was. Now, being a faithful fan of Tuesday Nights, I immediately looked at my daughter who was watching it with me and said, hey, that's one of the main writers for the show. So,
now, Jed Whedon also did the music. And I'm curious, that opening music, that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, that comes up for each act. I've heard that in a million different places. Okay, maybe not a million, maybe more like three. Okay, but different people using it on podcasts and different places like that. I thought that I was hearing it and recognizing it because it was like one of those pre-recorded garage band music loops or something like that. Apparently Jed Whedon wrote that.
So. Well, and I want you to slow down and let's give Joss a little credit here too, because Joss has some serious music credentials also. And I don't know if you know this about him, but when Joss started at Disney, before he was asked to come over and work on things like Toy Story and be kind of a script doctor for some things like that, he actually started with Disney in their music program.
Really? I did not know that.
Yes, that was his original goal, is he was going to be a composer. And he was learning the Disney style of music.
Hmm.
And so when you look at this, you know, you think Disney, you think musical animated features. To be honest, in many ways, this is, you know, an animated feature with real live people.
That's really cool because I didn't know that.
So let's give a thumbnail. This is a very high level plot summary.
Yes.
There's a guy. His name's Dr. Horrible. He's a villain. He wants to be recognized for his greatness.
But so he blogs about it. That's one way he gets some of his recognition. Unfortunately, he gets too much recognition in some ways from that.
Too bad. Yeah, because people he doesn't want to be watching and seem to. He is constantly stopped by his nemesis, the superhero Captain Hammer.
Yes.
And in one of those places in which Captain Hammer is blocking him is in the love area, because Dr. Horrible has fallen for a girl named Penny at the laundromat.
And Captain Hammer does not realize necessarily that Dr. Horrible is in love with her. But once he does realize it, he is going to use that as yet another weapon against Dr. Horrible. Because, hey, you know, they do not like each other.
No. I think it's all the hitting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is not Superman and Lex Luthor who they respect each other for what they can do.
They despise each other.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not, well, yeah. Okay, so he's in love. Captain Hammer has a new girlfriend. So Dr. Horrible's in love with Captain Hammer's girlfriend. Dr. Horrible also wants to be included into the League of Evil. And so to do so, he has to do some incredibly powerful,
evil
thing. And so as he's doing that, he has to deal with his feelings for Penny and his feelings about Captain Hammer. And I think that that's about as spoiler-free as we want to – I mean, about as far into spoilers as we want to go right now. Would you agree?
It is.
Okay.
So as we traditionally do, let's talk about these characters.
Now, we have – a number of characters that are just names that get thrown out there. In fact, some of them are not even names that are thrown out there for that we even hear. So let's throw a couple out here first. We have in the League of Evil, we have Professor Normal, Fake Thomas Jefferson, Tie-Dye, Fury Lika, Snakebite, and Bad Horse, who we'll get back to.
Oh, man. Fake Thomas Jefferson. Come on.
That is the coolest.
Kid, you gotta hide. Fake Thomas Jefferson's here. He's gonna read you a Bill of Rights. A declaration of independence of your money from your pocket.
Yes.
Fake Thomas Jefferson.
Now, there have been some comic book ties in. We can't speak to those because we have not, or I have not read them. Have you?
Funny thing. Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
I realized that today because I was trying to figure out if I could get my hands on it real quick. And I looked into Goodreads and found out that I had already read it. And out of my friends who read it, I was the only one who gave it a 3. And I found it completely forgettable. So it's been about 2-3 years since I've read it. But, yeah, I can't remember much in there.
Okay. So we also have the Bad Horse. What'd you call them?
Bad Horse Chorus?
Bad Horse Chorus. Okay. That's, interestingly enough, that's what Internet Movie Database calls them, too.
Well, I don't think I called him that.
All right. So we've got, you know, that's the universe we're in. All right. We are in a comic book universe. We are in a parody of a comic book universe. And we are in a universe where we are supposed to root for Dr. Horrible and hate Captain Hammer. And they are built up nicely. There are some nice character arcs that we'll talk about when we get to that. But Captain Hammer, he is where do you want to start? I'm just starting.
Well, it's Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, so I think we should start with Billy.
All right, let's start with Billy, a.k.a. Dr. Horrible. Did you like him? Did you appreciate him and love him the way the story wanted you to at the beginning?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Because the thing is I feel like Billy is somebody who's had some bad breaks in the past, just wants a little recognition for the things that he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest, he's a really smart guy, obviously. I mean, he builds a freeze ray. He builds a transport or whatever ray that partially
that almost works. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's clearly got some skills. He's clearly got some intelligence. But yet he's, you know, kind of stuck in a second-rate mad scientist role.
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen to what he talks about, you know, he wants to rule the world. But, you know, you almost feel like when he's talking about wanting to rule the world, he wants to rule it because, you know, everything's bad anyway. So I might as well rule it and maybe I can fix it.
Well, he's an anarchist who wants to rule the world. And I love the line where he's Penny comes to him and says, "You're not interested in the homeless, are you?" And he says, "No, I am, but it's a symptom. You're treating a symptom while the disease consumes the human race." And then he says, "The fish rots from the head." So I'm thinking, why not cut off the head? And that's where Penny says, "The head of the human race." And well, that's not a perfect metaphor. So,
but I mean, but even there. I feel like he's saying, you know, if I ruled the world would be better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he actually calls himself an anarchist later on. And, I mean, basically, he'll rule the world to remove the laws of the land as we have them. And he's the good guy of his story, you know?
He really
he
is.
Also
he's
has
the villain.
Yeah. I mean, that's – he's the villain in the universe, but he's the hero of this story, and he's the good guy of his own story. He's the hero of his own story. Here's the other thing with him is he's got honor and integrity. And like when he's told he has to kill someone or do something really horrible, killing, that's not elegant. You know, and so this is a character who I look at him, I feel for him because who hasn't had a crush on someone who doesn't even know your name?
Well, and the
this is high school and college for me, man. Right there.
Yeah, but don't you also get the feeling again? He's a villain. He's got a crush, but don't you feel like if Penny was to return those affections, that for Dr. Horrible, for Billy, that the world would be okay?
I think it comes close, and I honestly expected the story to go that way, and it almost does. But when things turn dark and Dr. Horrible turns darker, he hasn't gone and become, you know, taken a step toward the side of the angels yet. But I think he's considering, because, I mean, well, and this is the way that Captain Hammer is. You change, you know, sometimes when you're with that person you like, you change yourself to be the person you think they're going to like. And so I think that maybe, yes, he would for a little while have become, you know, put away his evilness to, you know, go and be with this woman who's helping the homeless. Because let's face it, Penny is the only good person in this trio of main characters.
Okay, I was going to say in the main characters. I mean, I feel like Moist is a nice guy. I mean, come on.
But he's also a villain.
Yeah, he is. But
he's there. He's not doing good things with his power. He doesn't have much bad things he can do with his power.
I feel like he would hydrate you. So
I don't think he would. I think he goes around, looks for people that he can, like, make
like ruining their stamps, you know, because he gets them wet before they can be licked.
Yes, that's something he would do. I could see him, like, making your tennis shoes moist so that you get athlete's foot.
Oh, that's so annoying. We're not even talking about him.
Well, we're going to.
So do you like Dr. Horrible, I'm assuming, and that you feel for him and it works for you?
I feel for him, yes. And I love him at the beginning the way that the script wants me to love him at the beginning. A lot of this is able to happen in a compressed amount of time because we get songs. And songs are when characters have feelings that you just can't express any other way other than to burst into. I mean, that's the emotion has to rise to that level. He starts there. You know, he has that question that right at the beginning. You talk about this her. Who is it? And he gets a faraway look in his face, and he starts singing about this love that he has. And so I'm relating to him, and I'm liking him. We'll talk about the end of his character arc, but he does, you know, he likes Penny, and we want him and Penny to get together because we want Penny to save him. Penny is his salvation from the life of villainy. I think you're right.
Yep, I do. Of course I'm right. I'm always right. So
except for the times you're not. Yeah.
Should we talk about the heroist villain?
Okay. Yeah.
So Captain Hammer.
Oh, we didn't. Wait. Sorry. Dr. Horrible. As far as also liking him, I mean, a big part of that comes from Neil Patrick Harris. We haven't talked about the actual actor playing him. Doogie Howser, the scientist from Starship Troopers. And of course, he's on How I Met Your Mother. And he was awesome.
He's very, very. I mean, when you look at Neil Patrick Harris's career, you know, he had Doogie Howser and he was super popular and out in the forefront. And then he had, you know, in adulthood, he had a few comedies. I want to say one of them had the Gentleman from Monk, and I really enjoyed it. But, you know, his career kind of had that middle part where he wasn't as popular.
Where he was like the Dufault from Joan of Arc or something like that, where it's just like this weird, you know, second tier character, and you're just, that's him. Yeah.
But I mean, for me, How You Met Your Mother should really, in many ways, be renamed Barney, because that's what I enjoy about it. And it almost feels like this is a part of his career where he can just do no wrong because of the fact that he does something like this. I don't know if you've seen any of those Harold or Kumar movies, but I know I've seen the first one where he plays himself, just like a crazy version of himself. And I mean, it's funny because he's clearly knows what he's doing, even if he's a little profane at times. I love it. I mean, I'll be excited. I love going to Disney California Adventure. And a few years ago, they changed the Barker on the California Screamin' roller coaster to him. And it's just fun that knowing that's Neil Patrick Harris and knowing how much he enjoyed that, because he's a giant Disney fan, giant Disney and magic.
All right. So now, Captain Hammer.
I do not like Captain Hammer.
Are you supposed to like Captain Hammer?
No.
Do you dislike him in the way the script wants you to dislike him?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I have an additional problem.
Well, let's get into it then.
Well, I mean, what they want you to do is they want you to not like him because he's a big jerk.
Mm-hmm. And he is.
I mean, in many ways, when you look at Captain Hammer, who's got his super strength and his near invulnerability, it's the Boy Scout Superman amped up five times.
Yeah. Pompous, arrogant. He's the smartest guy in the room. He's the strongest guy in the room.
That's the DC New 52 Superman, too. So.
Okay. But yeah, you're supposed – I mean, he is built up to be hated. So what's number two for you?
Well, and this goes back to writing. I do have a serious issue with his Act 3 monologue song.
We will talk about that in the spoiler section.
Well, this is kind of spoiler-free with that monologue song. He uses in that monologue song a derogatory word for a person with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of comparing it to in Something About Mary when the Matt Dillon character is trying to impress Cameron Diaz. He starts talking about helping people with special needs, and he uses some derogatory words in it. And to be honest, that version of this sort of joke worked for me because really what the joke is for me is everything he's saying is so wrong that it's funny. But when I saw that, I saw it with someone, a parent of a child with special needs. She was deeply offended. Now, her husband was there too, and he thought it was hilarious because, again, it was all the wrong words to be describing something and him thinking he was doing really, really great in what he was doing. But here, we don't have, 45 minutes to an hour of buildup before he drops that word out. And we don't have a lot of – well, to be honest, the situation has nothing to do with people with special needs either. So when he drops that word in there, I just wish writing-wise it hadn't been included because, yeah, it's making the point that he's super insensitive and a jerk. But I think they could have done it in a different way. So I think they were trying to show me that he was a jerk, and instead what happened is I was like, you really did not write that well.
Well, but here's the thing. It's interesting because this is actually the second place where they use special needs as something for humor.
Yep.
And the first one comes in the Freeze Ray song. That first song. Was it the first song or the second one? Yeah. It's the first song where tell you how you make me feel. What's the phrase? Like a fool, kind of sick, special needs, anyways. And I look at that, and it's just trying to use that for humor. And I will personally admit I have a horse in the race, all right? I grew up with my father working for an organization in Canada that works specifically, at that point, worked specifically with people with physical and mental disabilities. And so I grew up around group homes of people who had various disabilities and, what you would call maybe special needs. And now I volunteer every summer for 2 weeks at a camp where I'm a youth speaker for, again, these are families affected by different kinds of disabilities. And so those things do pop out at me. And the first time when I watched this back in 2008, I imagine it would have popped out at me, but I don't remember having any kind of reaction there. But watching it this time, it just was like, oh, why'd they go there? And then with the thing in the song that you're talking about, it fits to me. I watch it and I think to myself, in the first lyric that we're talking about, it doesn't work for me. The second one, I don't want it there, but the whole idea is he is trying to be. Well, we're not going to go into that, but it does kind of fit the song. Yeah. Again, I just don't feel like it belongs in the song.
Yeah, I think they could have done it in a different way. to be honest, there was a different audience in that second song that he could have also found derogatory words for that would have made more sense. And like you, again, I have a horse in the race. I spent my college years working in group homes. I've been a Special Olympics coach. My wife is a special ed teacher. So those sorts of things I'm very, very sensitive to. And I just think that one word, it was – again, I know it's in there for an effect, but I think it could have been done in a different way because instead of me just being mad at Hammer, I wound up being mad at Hammer and the writers.
Yeah. It just – it's meant to be an insult. I mean, the one you're talking about, it is specifically meant to be an insult. He's saying anyone who doesn't agree is one of the, is that, yeah. You know? And it's just like, you know, so it's being used as an insult by the writer. It's meant to be insensitive. It's meant to be, you know, completely wrong. But at the same time, it's meant to be an insult. And that's where that word specifically, that's the problem that people have with it is that, you know,
but it's the medical term. Well, technically
thing is it's meant to be an insult when it is used to talk about somebody, whether they have special needs or not.
Well, rarely. The version of the word has never been used as a medical term that he used because it's a shortened version of a word that has been used as a medical term.
So anyway.
The other thing that kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit, again, I watched this with my tween.
Mm-hmm.
My tween loved it, thought it was great, but I didn't really enjoy, and again, caught me by surprise because it's been a few years since I saw it, when he talks about what his hammer is.
Because it's not his fists, yeah.
Because it's not his fists. And it becomes pretty clear fast that he's pretty promiscuous, and again, you know, I don't have to... I watched Tracks again tonight, and I got, just like last week, the question of what does that mean after the prostitutes? Did it have to be plural line? And that's, I was like, no, we just did this last week. And she goes, no, what does plural mean?
And then that's where you say, ask your English teacher. Yeah. You know, parents shouldn't have to talk about that.
I've seen her grades in English. She should know. So
anyway, I'm curious. This would probably get just a PG rating, but watching it by myself, you know, it's a funny line because it is again that character, and you know he makes the. I don't want to give away the punchline there, but it's a funny line. But then it's also, yeah, you're not expecting it necessarily. Cause really they don't go there until that point. I think it's in the second act where they start, you know, kind of dropping some little more,
risque.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it. It was nothing that offended me, but I wouldn't watch it with my kids. So, but again, it's a character moment and it's humor.
And it does reinforce the fact that he is definitely a big self-indulgent, self-focused, narcissistic jerk.
Right. So that is my problem with the character, is that it's too much. This is a character who is created and put on the screen with no redeeming qualities whatsoever. I understand that it's that you would want
he's
to do
handsome,
that.
He's strong. Come on, those are redeeming.
No. My problem is that he's just so bad. We have such extremes, and it's a musical, and musicals go to extremes. You know, I'll give you that. But on the one hand, we have Dr. Horrible, the villain that you're supposed to love, and you have Captain Hammer, the hero you're supposed to despise, and we'll get into the character arcs when we're talking about them, but it was a little over the top. Again, it's a musical, so understandable that it would go over the top, but yeah. So that's Captain Hammer. Nathan Fillion, again, perfect casting for this guy. Perfect casting. Yeah.
Joss Whedon seems to know what role to put Nathan Fillion in.
Definitely.
I mean, he can cast that guy.
Well, and okay, three things with Whedon that I know of. I don't know if Nathan Fillion appeared in Buffy or Angel or anything. But between Firefly, this, and Much Ado About Nothing, three completely different characters, but three roles that are perfect for Nathan Fillion. And I love it because there's variety and range in Nathan Fillion. He's awesome. So, any more thoughts about Nathan Fillion or Captain Hammer?
I think we got it.
Okay. By the way, Captain Hammer's powers, he feels like old Superman. You know, he can jump really high. He's really strong, and he's invulnerable. He can throw a car. He can take – he was willing to take a car crash, but, you know, things happen. But, yeah, he's definitely – he's that old school superhero with an – you know, he's Hancock only 10, 20, 30 times worse. All right, who's next, Daniel?
Oh, that'd be Penny, the love interest.
Penny – Felicia Day. All right. Well, I already said this about her. She's the one good character in our primary three characters.
Yeah, she's really, really nice.
She is. Genuinely nice. And almost to an extreme there, too.
But don't you feel like they have to be doing extremes in here?
I told you. Again, it's a musical. I get that.
They only have 40 minutes. It's a musical. It's not like they've got time for a lot of setup. So you almost have to go to extremes in order to get your message across. You have to go bigger than the media in many ways.
Right. Well, this is where you're using the cliche, I guess. And maybe I shouldn't ding this from the first two guys, especially Captain Hammer. They're using the cliche to paint with broad strokes so you know exactly who you're dealing with. With Felicia Day, with Penny, you're dealing with a beautiful young lady who is very, very nice, so nice that she's working with and obsessed with helping people, genuinely helping people, working with the homeless, trying to get them places to sleep, trying to get them food to eat. And you can't get much nicer than that. Even if they had made her a nurse, okay? Make her a nurse. What's her job? Her job is to nurture, but it's her job. This is not her job. This is her calling. This is her passion. So, Penny. What'd you think of Penny?
I think she's nice. I mean, that's the word that keeps coming up. I mean, they want us to think she's nice.
You're kind of saying it like it's a bad word, though.
Well, I mean, if you were to say one thing about her, she's naive because she does kind of start with, I think she calls Captain Hammer a tool, ironically enough, since his shirt has a hammer on it. But in the end, I mean, she kind of falls into the trap that he's a good guy. And, you know, he makes a second date.
Which is unusual for him, yeah.
And, you know, but I don't know. She's nice.
Okay. And see, you're having the same problem with her that I had with Captain Hammer, is that her characterization is thin. You know, she's nice. That's, you know, the word to describe her. But again, Felicia Day, perfect casting, I think. I can imagine there might be someone else you could put in that role, but you wouldn't need to because you got Felicia Day. And she's perfect.
Yeah.
So... you want to talk about their relationship, though?
So we have the love triangle. So Billy loves Penny,
mm-hmm.
who likes Billy as a friend. And Penny is dating Captain Hammer and is becoming more and more interested in him as time goes on, to the frustration of Billy, who is the arch nemesis of Captain Hammer.
Right. Now, there are some moments where you have some moments for her where she says, you know, things like, he's not as bad as you'd think, or he's not as, there's something underneath.
Yeah.
And right. And that's where Dr. Horrible Billy says, well, you know, sometimes there's something underneath that you're not expecting, but then underneath that is the surface level. You know, that's what it was. She says, there's something underneath surface level. He says, well, sometimes
there's a third level.
You go right from the surface level to this underneath the surface level, right back to the surface level, like pie. But anyway, okay, so Captain Hammer.
It's a believable love story.
It's a
love triangle, I should say.
It's a great triangle. I mean, as far as just on paper. Captain Hammer hates Dr. Horrible. Captain Hammer lusts after Penny, who isn't his type, his normal type.
Well, no, I think Captain Hammer is using Penny and enjoying her company.
Right.
But he's using Penny partially because of the fact that he knows that he can upset Dr. Horrible, because Dr. Horrible wants to be with Penny. And
but
so
not
another
at first.
Way to punch him is to
but not at first. At first, he's just using her for what he's using her for, which is to unleash
the hammer.
The hammer.
But, I mean, that's again, not a good guy. He doesn't do second dates because he dates you once and then you know, he uses the hammer and then he's done.
Right.
The reason
probably because people after the first date realize this guy's not a good guy.
Well, I get the sense that he likes using the hammer with various people.
I believe that.
I think he enjoys that, and he thinks that that's the way life should be.
Okay. But it's a good triangle, especially on paper, and then you get it in here in 45 minutes. 45 minutes, and just look at how these relationships twist and turn and start, you know, and end. There's a huge amount of story arcing going on here as far as the characters go. Okay, so what next? You want to talk about some of these?
So we have two other characters we absolutely have to talk about.
Yes, Moist.
Moist.
Moist, who's played by
Simon Helberg.
Okay, and that is – do I know him from Big Bang Theory?
You do know
okay.
him from Big Bang Theory.
All right.
Guess he is Wolowitz on Big Bang Theory.
All right. I don't watch that too often, but I thought I recognized him. I recognize him from – I think Big Bang Theory. All right. Moist is really funny. Nice. You know, he's a good friend. Yeah.
He's a good friend.
He is.
He's supportive. He's kind. He's there when you rob a bank. If you need something hydrated, he's available. He's also the good friend that's trying to, you know, kind of help you set your expectations. You know, if you can't make it into the evil league of evil, you've got the hours to make it into the henchman union. So, I mean, he's there. He's got plan C all wrapped up for Dr. Horrible.
And here's why. You want to know why? Because this guy, Moist, his life is plan C. I don't think he even bothers with plan A or B in his life. He's Moist, you know? He's just, you know what? I'm just going to go and I'm going to go and make someone's ice cream melt in their ice cream stand at the park. And so while he's dealing with that, I can steal his change box. You know, that's, you know, and look, I've got $40 today. That's $40 more than I had yesterday. You know, plan C. That's Moist's life.
And he's definitely, that's where his ambitions are. And then
a great character.
A great character. And I'll argue the next character that we're going to talk about is another great character, even though we only see him on screen one time, which is Bad Horse.
Yes. Do we talk about this character?
Well, I think we have to talk about the fact that he's really, really evil.
And he is. Yeah, we'll save for the spoiler section some of the punchline here. Yeah, he's bad.
He's the thoroughbred of sin, man. He is the supervillain you have to impress to get into the evil league of evil.
Yes, and
is set high.
The Bad Horse chorus sings his wishes, you know, and they just kind of pop in, and they're nice. They're not the Greek chorus. We have the groupies who kind of they're not really the Greek chorus either.
I look at them as being like a singing telegram
almost, but you get the impression that they're not there. At least I get the impression that they're not there.
Like they're in your mind.
Right, right. And this is true throughout the whole thing. Dr. Horrible is our primary character, our primary point of view into this story. And so there are oftentimes songs where he will be interacting with environments that he's not actually in. So he'll be singing about Penny and Captain Hammer. He's actually, you know, walking around them, but they don't know he's there because this is his imaginary world, his imaginary realm. And so this Bad Horse Chorus, you get the impression they're not there when they're singing, like when he's reading the letter at the beginning. But then they're in later on. They're actually in physically in a party. So these three guys exist. They're his henchmen. But it's just – anyway, it's kind of interesting. So how they get used.
So, Ben, I think those are our characters.
You want to talk about style a little bit?
We've argued over it. I've called it a Disney movie of super villainy, but you don't think it is. So.
It takes a little while to get used to because it's not traditional. It's not traditional musical. And it moves from different perspectives. You know, you start out and he's talking to his blog. It's a video blog. And he's talking, he's answering letters. And then all of a sudden, bam, you're in a song and suddenly we have his imagination, which is not in the blog. I mean, you can't see his imagination in the blog. So we're changing perspective there. And all of a sudden, bang, once again, there's a knock on the door and suddenly we're out of the camera and we're into the apartment that he lives in. And so it's a little jarring at first to kind of get used to the language of this story. But once you do, it's not that big of a deal. But again, that's what I'm talking about, where you have characters coming in and out who aren't really there, because it's not a stage musical. You can do whatever you want. You know what it reminded me of? The Bad Horse Chorus. You ever watch Little Shop of Horrors?
Nope.
Oh. Well, it reminded me of the three backup singers who are just everywhere in Little Shop of Horrors.
But, you know, that's the thing about Little Shop of Horrors is the music was written by Howard Ashman and Alan Menken, who, of course, I don't know, Little Mermaid. Boom. Yeah. Mind blown.
Not particularly blown, but I thought you said you haven't seen it, though.
I haven't seen Little Shop of Horror. Well, I'm not into giant monsters like you.
I think Frank Oz is in that.
I could see that. He's probably the monster plant thing.
Yeah. Or did Frank Oz direct it? Okay, rabbit trail, back on track.
Different story. So we're going to go into spoilers here in a few minutes.
Yes.
So here's my question to you. Do you like it?
I can't get into spoilers.
No, I mean.
So I'm going to say that, yes, I liked it overall. There are parts that we're going to talk about when we get into spoilers that were unexpected to me, that fit the tone, but that weren't where I wanted the story to go. That's how I'm going to put it. And on the other hand, with that, though, it wasn't where I wanted the story to go, but it was true to the story.
And I think that's fair.
And so, yes, maybe I didn't like it because that's where I wanted the story to go a different direction. But at the same time, I'm watching it and saying to myself, okay, in fact, I don't think I've ever seen Act 3. It feels like I haven't because I was totally shocked by a lot of the twists in Act 3. Act 1 and 2, I know I watched on Hulu. I thought I watched Act 3 on Hulu. And if I didn't watch Act 3 on Hulu, I'm positive I watched Act 3 when I bought it on iTunes. I looked at my iTunes. It does not register that I ever watched it. I bought it, downloaded it, and didn't watch it. And so it's quite possible I never saw Act 3. But anyway.
Shaking head.
You answered your question. Yes, I liked it.
So my opinion has kind of changed. I watched it 3 years ago or so, and then I realized that I've never taken the time to watch it again. I read that comic, and it was completely forgettable to me. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, when I watched it this time, it was okay, but it wasn't great. It wasn't like anything where I was going to be like, oh, I'm going to start quoting Dr. Horrible all the time now. I thought it was okay. But it definitely wasn't, and I, I don't know if it's because of time. It definitely wasn't super exciting for me. It wasn't something I'm going to be talking about all week long.
Give it a grade, Daniel. A, B, C, or D, or F. F being complete failure, A being incredibly awesome, C being it passes but it's average.
I'm going to give it a B minus.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I'm giving it an A minus.
Yeah.
I'm giving it an A minus. And I think anyone who likes Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, if you like the show and like the things that they do with the show, go ahead. You know, I think you'll like this. There's the half point turning point where the story changes.
You know what? Maybe what it is. This could be what it is. The reason I'm watching this again is because of our connection to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Even again tonight, rewatching just half of Tracks with the family, everything about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is so fast paced that I am constantly tense.
Very little tension in this.
Yeah, and maybe that's it. Is because of the fact that I wasn't tense, maybe that just created a Laurel letdown. So,
a Laurel letdown. He pulls from the Green Screen Podcast. Nice. And if they ever listened, they would probably say nice along with me.
Truth.
Okay, so I think we have similar opinions, but different. How's that for noncommittal? Okay, so I think we're going to put in a spoiler alert right now. Would you agree?
Yep.
We're going to talk about the end of this thing.
Since you'd be the one inserting it.
That's right. I'm not sure if I'm going to use... there's a couple different spoiler alerts I thought about using. I thought about just using the one that I use in my other podcast. I mean, why not? I made it.
I think you should steal the Dr. Horrible theme and get into it. Everybody else is using it.
I want to know why everyone else is using it. I just assumed it was some sort of public domain, you know, little thing. But apparently,
but you're right. I've heard it on other podcasts too.
Apparently, they're referencing Dr. Horrible, or you know, the referencing is the one way you could put it. Stealing from is the other way. But
spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Now that we're on the other side of the spoiler alert, I can let you all know that Ben edited me earlier when I revealed what species Bad Horse is.
It's a punchline. It's so, again, I feel like I've never seen Act 3, because when they went to Bad Horse in the boardroom for the League of Evil, it's just a horse standing there. I mean, okay, the final song, no matter what you think about anything that's going on here, which we'll talk about, it's horrible. It's terrible. It's depressing. But at the same time, there's all these weird, goofy things going on there. One of them being the League of Evil, just sitting around that table. And there's a horse standing at the end of the table.
Because he's Bad Horse and he's leading the league.
It's absurdist and it's hilarious and it's weird and it's happening behind this terrible, horrible, emotional song.
So here's my question to you. And I know we're probably not talking a ton about Act 3 now. So in your mind, does Bad Horse talk like Mr. Ed, or does he exclusively communicate through the Bad Horse chorus?
Okay. I want to say that he has some sort of telepathic hold. The Bad Horse chorus are his thralls, and they speak in rhyme for him. I want to say that, but they're not.
Like Etrigan, or I just mispronounced his name, but the demon from DC who speaks in rhyme.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a musical, though, so speaking in rhyme is really not that big of a deal. But the only problem with that theory is there is no one. The chorus is not in the boardroom. The horse is by himself. He walks into the boardroom. The horse is there.
But I'm convinced he just does it with a look in there. I
don't know. Maybe he just, you know, telepathically speaks to anyone.
I think Dead Bowie knows. Dead Bowie.
Dead Bowie
knows.
Okay. I have a lot of questions about this ending. I have things I want to talk about this ending.
So the ending itself is, you know, we've got the big opening of the homeless shelter. And Dr. Horrible comes to wreck it with his freeze ray and to fight Captain Hammer, murder him, because Bad Horse is requiring a death after his previous mistakes mm-hmm. and failures.
And he so, bristles against this. He does not want to kill.
But after the "my hammer is not my fist" speech, he knows who he is going to kill, because Captain Hammer has crossed the line.
Yes.
And I mean, he's dedicated. I mean, that whole Brand New Day song to me is really, you know, like, he now knows what he must do.
Well, he's a new person. And this is a great turning point, ka-ching, for the character. The story arc just goes left. You know, the character arc goes left, I should say. And it's again, he's singing because there's nothing else he can do. He is emotionally ready to move. He is changing his entire trajectory.
So he goes to the opening and he brings his freeze ray and it stops. And he monologues. Why did he monologue?
That's the problem.
In front of the frozen Captain Hammer body, but then the freeze ray breaks. He, of course, gets hit. And then and Hammer grabs his death ray and prepares to use it on Dr. Horrible. But it blows up in Captain Hammer's face. And we think Dr. Horrible's won the day. But then we look over and we see the Penny as shrapnel.
Yeah. Captain Hammer has never felt pain before. He runs off squealing. We're going to talk about Captain Hammer's character arc in a moment here. Penny's dead.
Captain Hammer will save us.
Her dying words to Billy, not recognizing that he's Dr. Horrible, I think. She's trying to comfort him. Again, this is her kindness here. She's trying to comfort him. Captain Hammer will save us. Not knowing it's the worst possible thing you could say to him.
So everybody blames Dr. Horrible for the death of Penny, which then fulfills Bad Horse's requirement of a murder. Which
again,
means
I don't remember any of this.
Dr. Horrible's now part of the evil League of Evil.
Is
he? He is. That
is he?
Fulfilled the murder. The thing is about this ending song, Everything You Ever. I mean, right there, it's saying it in the title. Dr. Horrible now has everything he's ever wanted. And you see in this closing song, you know, his machines are working. He's got the admirers. He's got the big party. You know, he's accepted by the evil League of Evil because he's able to do evil. Because, again, it's Captain Hammer's not there to stop him. Mm-hmm. So everything's going his way. I mean, really, that's what this song is. It's everything's going my way. I've got everything I've ever wanted.
He's able to rob banks without even trying. I mean, his heart's not into it, but they're pouring money at his feet.
I got everything I ever wanted, everything I ever blogged about and said I needed. But do I really have everything that I truly need? Because Penny's not there. He's empty, even though he's won the lottery. He's got the gold medal. He can sweep like a crazy man on the curling team. He has everything, and he has nothing.
Right. And he feels nothing. He feels nothing because he did it. You know, he knows she's dead because of him. Now, Captain Hammer was the one who pulled the trigger. But if he hadn't been doing that, if Dr. Horrible had not made the choice to go after Hammer like that, she'd be alive. Or if he had chosen not to monologue, she'd be alive. I have two interpretations here, though. I'm watching this, and at first, you know, it's kind of this dreamlike where he's, you know, going and all the stuff and going through the party, going into the boardroom, doing the bank thing. It's all he's singing, but you don't see him singing because you're seeing, you know, these events happening. So one interpretation is that it's all as it is. But then when it goes and cuts to him at that last phrase, where he doesn't feel a thing, it made me wonder if that was all a dream. If the things that happened after Penny is taken away were just him sitting back and saying, I've got everything I want now. Or not that he has everything he wants, but that everything is going to come to him now. But was it worth it? Because I don't feel a thing. you know, and part of me wonders if that whole last sequence, that whole montage during the song was just his thoughts of what might be coming to him.
Well, and I've definitely taken it as being this is what happens next, because the dream is a dream. And so if it's just fiction, it's not as painful. But this movie really ends on a painful note if that's all real.
Even if it's not real, it's painful. Because...
Well, but the thing is, if it's not real, you know, he can wake up from his daydream and he can move on into the sequel, which is, you know, scheduled to come out in 2015, 16, you know, whenever they're done working on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is made delayed. But if it's not, if it's really what happened, I mean, he's now in this new routine that is a false face, a mask.
He's
hiding his internal pain.
Yeah, he has transformed. He's put on a red jacket now. He's wearing the goggles. I mean, that's a specific moment of transformation, is when he pulls the goggles over his eyes. But then that last phrase where he's at the table out of costume, he's Billy at the table. You know, I wonder how much, well, let's analyze this. I wonder how much of what we're watching is Billy wearing a costume for the whole entire thing. It's Billy, you know, wearing a costume. Then at the end, making the transformation, and he is Dr. Horrible now. He really is Dr. Horrible. And Billy is now the, you know, in the background. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into this or something, but...
It's just a musical, man. It's just a musical.
It's not just a musical. You can't say it's just a musical. It's a musical. They sing. It's a musical. I'm amazed we've gotten this far without actually singing.
Oh, I'm so glad we have.
One thing that makes it easy not to sing is when we normally sing, it's songs out of context. Here, I don't know the songs well enough that are in context.
So, yeah.
Okay, so, but definitely that's a character arc there. And no matter what, it's a tragedy, okay? And I tend to go with you on that it really happened, but I just, with that last moment, just kind of triggered this. That felt like a dream. I mean, it was filmed dreamlike. He's walking through the party, everything's slow motion, you know. It's filmed dreamlike, but it could be him just walking through, you know, again, numb. He's completely emotionally numb. He opened his heart to allow himself to feel love, quote unquote, for this woman. And now that she is gone at his hands, more or less, he feels nothing. So it's a nice character arc. It's not where I want to see a character go. But again, I don't go against it because it fits.
You know what
story.
It is? It's Greek tragedy.
Yeah, it's tragedy. It's definitely
exactly
tragedy.
What it is.
Yeah.
It's a Greek tragedy. Your hero ends in a painful mess.
Here, yeah. And, you know, there's the death of someone you like. You know, it's not, I mean, the one person who dies does not deserve it. All right. And now she would say, you know, things happen or everything happens. That's what she says. Everything happens. And he interrupts her and says, for a reason, don't say for a reason. And she says, well, no, I was just saying everything happened, so he actually didn't interrupt her. So I misspoke, but you know, this movie, this 45-minute musical, that might be the theme. Everything happens,
but
not for a reason. Okay. Okay, so I threw out my crazy theory that I don't even necessarily believe myself.
Yeah, you talked yourself out of it.
I'm still wondering. But it's not as open-ended as it could be, you know, to really get into it. Like, well, what does this ending really mean? This isn't Inception we're talking about. Captain Hammer. Here's something I wanted to throw at you, Daniel. Captain Hammer's song that you turned against and that I did not like for the word. I look at that song and I wonder if we are looking at Captain Hammer having a slight turn on his character arc. he seems to be genuine. He doesn't want to read from the cue cards. He's actually trying to give people, it's still all about him. He still has this ego thing going, but he's saying everyone can be a hero. Even stinky alcoholic bums. I wonder if Penny's actually rubbed off on him.
And see, I didn't take it that way. I took it as his true colors are revealed, in Penny's eyes specifically.
I agree with you there.
She's the one who's she's physically moving away. She's sliding out of the room so she can get away from him. The sense that I have is he probably makes crazy speeches like this all the time, but people buy into it because he's Captain Hammer.
I agree with you about Penny. I agree with you that once he starts actually talking, Penny actually gets to see what he's like. But I do wonder. I'm hearing him saying these things, and it's just, these seem to be not disingenuous platitudes, but insensitive and unintelligent platitudes.
But he's an insensitive and unintelligent guy.
Right, but I feel like he's actually trying to, inspire. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's actually kind of caught on to Penny's niceness and that she has changed him slightly for the better. When I look at storytelling and I look at, you have these two diametric opposites. Dr. Horrible is a good bad guy who becomes more evil. Captain Hammer is a bad good guy who becomes slightly more good. I'm looking at these as mirror images of each other, and maybe I'm bringing that into it and I shouldn't be. But I'm seeing one lean one way, and I'm wondering, okay, is Captain Hammer also leaning more toward the person he's supposed to be? Of course, then he runs off like a wounded pig and squealing like a wounded pig and crying for his psychologist. But I don't
buy it. I think it's just a reflection of who he is. Conceited, stuck-up jerk who says things to try to make people like him.
But that's all still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all slightly more genuine. That's what I think.
I think he's always been genuine and caring for himself.
But here he's actually accepting that, okay.
Narcissism.
Everyone's
is
a hero, maybe not quite as heroic as me. And, I can't remember the exact words that he uses. But anyway, that's the other thing I wanted to throw out there about this ending. I also wanted to throw out this line, and we'll have to edit this if this is the line you plan to use, Daniel. But I love when he's about to kill Dr. Horrible and he says, "You give my regards to St. Peter or whoever has his job, but in hell." It's a great line.
It was on the short list, but okay. No.
I hate the homeless. Ness problem. he gets all the best lines. Have I seen you at the gym?
But see, when I was going off,
I don't
about
go to the gym. I'm just naturally like
speech,
this.
When I'm going off about the speech and this about the song, if he had stuck to that homeless theme and tried to take the joke that way again, that he's being inappropriate, but he thinks he's saying something really good. That would have worked for me if they had stuck to the homeless, made some bum jokes in there, made some hobo jokes in there because of the setting that he's in with you opening specifically a homeless shelter. It's the fact that they go the special needs area that really kind of bugs me in the writing.
Yeah. I'm watching him, though, and I'm seeing – I'm hearing language from him that's from people I've known, and – I don't know. I think that there might be a slight redemptive arc there, but very, very slight.
Very, very slight.
So, again, 45 minutes. We don't have time to really build a in-depth, detailed arc. But okay, so anything else here about the end? Did we miss anything?
It's painful. Painful, oh, it's painful, painful.
It's terrible, and it's angry, and it's mean, and I didn't feel good after seeing it. And that's the one thing about this. A musical, you end feeling good usually. This is an opera.
And I feel really bad tonight because I thought that fake Thomas Jefferson was in fact Napoleon when I saw him.
Oh.
So, but I mean, same sort of outfit, maybe a little taller, but he was sitting, so.
Okay. Well, there we have it.
There we go.
All right.
We did it. That's your horrible.
Yeah. Hey, thanks.
Sing along blog.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for suggesting this to the handful of people who suggested this. And sorry that I can't like call out the actual person who suggested it first, but I think we might have even had it suggested like months ago first. And then some other people, we've gotten emails and Facebook messages, so I appreciate that. Daniel, before we say goodbye, I want to ask our listeners, what did you think about Dr. Horrible? And do you agree with us? Especially since we've already had, you know, a ton of talking about this, Daniel and I. If you disagree with us about something specifically, or if you want to just really make sure that people catch on to something that we said that we fumbled through and actually may have even said something accurate or interpreted it nicely or whatever, we want to hear from you. So, yeah. Daniel, anything to add to that?
It's curtains for you, Dr. Horrible. Lacy, gently walking curtains.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening. My son sad tromboned me today. I said, did you just sad trombone me? He said, yeah, because you said something really stupid.
I want to give that kid a high five.
Okay.
And he's a real horse.
No, we can't say that.
Yeah, I think we could say that.
No, that's the punchline. That's the punchline of that character, yes.
Is it really?
It is. I'm stopping recording.
So you got to stop recording. Now that we're on the other side of the spoiler alert, I can let you all know that earlier tonight, Ben actually edited me. I can't even say the word.
Now I have to edit you again.
I know where that's going.
You want to start that over?
Yes.
Okay, hang on. Welcome to Level 7 is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Learn how to podcast, get productive in your personal and professional life, theorize over TV shows like Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, Under the Dome, and of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., laugh with our clean comedy, delve into science fiction and philosophy, learn critical thinking from movie reviews, and more at noodle.mx.